It was another head-scratching weekend for the New York Yankees, as it looked like they were primed to at least split the series with the Boston Red Sox. However, drastic incidents happened, and the Yankees leave Boston having lost 3 out of 4. We're going to break it all down for you on this brand new episode of the Pinstripe Talk podcast, which begins right now.
You are listening to the Pinstripe Talk podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to yet another edition of the Pinstripe Talk podcast, powered to you by Delahanty Media. I'm your host, Nick Delahanty. It was an adventurous weekend, to say the least, for the New York Yankees. A rather disappointing weekend at that. Yankees dropped 3 out of 4 games at Fenway Park against the rival Red Sox, and it was a weekend where it should have been at least a split, but the Yankees found a way to blow 2 very important games in this series in very, very crazy ways. We're going to talk all about it on this broadcast and more. Of course, we got a lot to discuss. Before we get into all this, and before I go on some rants, because obviously I've had some time to let this linger a little bit, and I'll explain as we go on in the show. Remember, follow us on social media. Look up Pinstripe Talk Podcast. We're live on Twitter and on Facebook. And also check out the Delahanty Media brand. Go to our website, DelahantyMedia.com. And you can find all our social media links on there as well. If you're listening to the show already, you found a podcasting platform that suits your interest. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show on there. All your feedback is definitely positive and goes a long way in helping with our show. And of course, you get all the latest updates on when we release new content. So it's a win-win. You help us. Your podcasting platform helps you. I think that's a win all around. Now, I don't want to waste any more time. I've been lingering on this for over 24 hours. Now, for those of you who are in the tri-state area, you know that the summertime is good shore time. And I'm an LBI guy. Shout out to my LBI crew. You know, I was down the shore and I could have easily avoided watching this series if I wanted to. You know, the way the Yankees have been, they've been better going into this series, you know, winning the last couple of series and showing a little bit more intensity, I would say, over those span of games. However, this weekend, as we were all getting pulled back into thinking that this team had some kind of hope, it kind of just went down the drain. And it was just a frustrating way to watch everything go down. And the two key games that we're going to talk a lot about in this one are Game 1 and Game 4. Those were the two that the Yankees had a very good chance of winning the ball game, and it did not work out. Frustrating, to say the least. However, let's jump right into the action. Game 1, Yankees going to Fenway Park, Thursday night. Now remember, 4-game series, so Thursday, Friday, and then the 2 weekend games. The Yankees take a lead into the bottom half of the 9th inning. Let's take you there, just in case you missed the game. Top of the 4th, Gleyber Torres hit a ground out to short, scoring Gardner, made it 1-0 Yankees. Nothing else happened till the bottom half of the 7th. Kike Hernandez, who's becoming a Yankee killer, hit a sac fly to center, scoring Verdugo. That tied your ball game up at 1. In the top of the 8th, Yankees get some life. A Giancarlo Stanton single to center field, scoring LeMahieu. Then a Gleyber Torres sac fly, scored Gardner, gave the Yankees a 3-1 lead that they would hold going into the 9th inning. Important to note, this is where I'm going to stop you. Jordy Montgomery started the game for the Yankees. Pitched really well. Did not allow a run. Only allowed 3 hits. Struck out 6. The Yankees tried to get as many outs out of him as they could. He was able to get 2 outs into the 6th. Insert Sal Romano, who the Yankees just called up. He gets 2 outs, followed by Lickie, who ended up giving up the lead. He was the one that led up the Kike Hernandez sac fly. And then the Yankees turned the ball over in the 8th inning to Luis Sessa with a 2-run lead. Sessa, say what you want about the guy. I've ripped him a couple of times on this show in the past. The guy's been really good this year. Yankees have been able to use him in different spots. And whether he's used in a long relief type of role or in a higher leverage situation, the guy's been really solid. Only needed five pitches to get through the eighth inning. Think about that. Only five pitches to get through the eighth inning. Okay? So, Aaron Boone, you can make the case that Aaron Boone had a decision to make. Whether to keep Sessa in and let him start the ninth, or turn to a guy like Chad Green. I guarantee you, and this is not me defending Aaron Boone, but it was the right decision to go to your top guy. I don't blame Boone at all for going to Green. Now, did it backfire? Absolutely. But he made the right decision. Let's go back in time. And I know for a fact that if Sessa went out to start the ninth, Yankee fans all over social media would be crying that he didn't go to Green. And if Sessa got into any bit of trouble, and then Green had to come in and blew the save, it would have been complete chaos. Unfortunately, it did not work out. Green simply did not have it. Allowed the two runs to tie the game. Threw 18 pitches, allowed three hits. He was not sharp. The move backfired, but it's a move that I think that the Yankees make 10 out of 10 times. You know, they trust in Chad Green. He's had his little hiccups here and there, but they know what Chad Green is capable of. It just did not work out in this situation. So, you know, I saw a lot of, why didn't they leave in Sessa? And I understand that. You know, after throwing five pitches, you would think that they would have gave him a little bit more leeway. However, I think the Yankees wanted and knew how important that game was, and they were sitting in that situation saying to themselves, you know what, we have a really good chance of winning this game. Sessa's been pitching well, but let's go to one of our top guys. And it's also important to remember, Zach Britton pitched 2 days in a row. You also had Aroldis Chapman, who pitched 2 days in a row. So, they were very shorthanded in the bullpen. Plus, you don't have Jonathan Loaisiga, who's still on the COVID list. So, at that point, maybe you give Sessa a little more leeway, but I honestly, if I was sitting in Aaron Boone's shoes, I would have went to Chad Green too. I would have known the importance of the game. I would have said to them, you know what? Right now, there's a guy we trusted all year. Let's give him the ball. I can't blame Boone for that one. You know, that's something that I really can't just blame him for. I blame him for a lot of stuff. You guys know that. But I kind of have to support the decision there, even though it backfired. Moving forward, Green struggles. They tie the game. We go to extras. Yankees score a run in the top half of the 10th, but insert Brooks Christie. Remember, now the Yankees bullpen's a little shaked up. They don't have much depth, so Aaron Boone's options were limited. Brooks Christie, four wild pitches in one inning. To put into perspective, they did not even have a hit against Brooks Christie. Like, think about that. They didn't even have a hit against the guy. Walked one, walked around the bases. What a joke. So it ended up being Devers scored on the wild pitch. Remember, the runners on second base. And then a sac fly from Renfro scores Bogarts, and that's your ball game. What an ugly mess. And of course, Christie goes down to the minor leagues right after the game, because obviously the way he performed, that's not big league caliber. He knows that. The Yankees know that. Rough day for Rob Brantley behind the plate, especially that 10th inning. Not fun whatsoever, but regardless, another gut-wrenching loss for the New York Yankees. Another game where you just can't wrap your head around the fact that they lost. They get the lead in the 8th. You think they have it ready. Sessa puts up a beautiful inning in the bottom half. You go to Green. You're feeling confident. He blows the lead. You get the lead back again in the top half of the 10th. Christie cannot even throw a strike. And just like that, Yankees lose another heartbreaker. Now, you may be saying to yourself, you know, why do you torture yourself? I ask myself that a lot. But regardless, let's move on to game two. And this is something that I just don't understand. Rafael Devers is quietly growing into one of the game's best players. I've said this to a couple of my buddies who are Red Sox fans who were not very happy with him defensively over the last couple of years. I've said to them, look, and you could ask them, they'll definitely vouch for me by saying this. His bat is way too good. And defensively, he's going to come around. The guy looks like an absolute superstar. and he absolutely mashes against the Yankees. Now, Gerrit Cole on the mound, you're hoping that after a heartbreaker, Cole could come in and get the job done. Unfortunately, Cole was solid, but he had to grind the entire night. Only got through five innings, allowed three runs, six hits, struck out eight. The big blow was a Rafael Devers homer to center field off of him. That really capped off Cole's night. All the Red Sox damage against Cole, all three runs, came in that fifth inning. So, at a point where the Yankees had a 1-0 lead going into that inning, it ended up being that they were trailing, and it was a lead that they could never get back. Devers was not done. He added a home run in the seventh, made it 6-1, an Odor double in the ninth, cut the lead to 6-2, but that's all she wrote. Yankees lose a second straight game against the Red Sox, and at that point, cap at least losing 2 out of 4 to their rivals from Boston. Cole, we mentioned, was solid, had to grind a little bit, but wasn't your typical Gerrit Cole. Yankees really need him to be that guy. Nestor Cortes, fresh off the COVID list, threw two innings. Really wasn't sharp, but again, can you blame him? The guy just came off the COVID list, really not able to do much. Yankees trying to ease him back in before inserting him back into the rotation. He allows three runs. That was off the Devers home run. And then Justin Wilson, with his 7.5 ERA, throws a shutout inning to pitch the Yankees' last inning in the field. Yankees 1-for-9 with runners in scoring position, left 11 guys on base. Rinse, wash, repeat. Kind of the same old garbage you get all the time. Red Sox had a couple of guys with multi-hits. The big one was Devers with the 5 RBIs and the 2 homers. And again, just seems like the Yankees can't catch a break, especially when they're playing against the Red Sox. You think going in, Gerrit Cole on the mound, this is the game we must win. And again, another time with him there that Yankees could not come up with the victory. Game 3. Yankees looking for a hero to get them back on track. Is it Jameson? Jameson Taillon goes 7 strong innings for the Yankees. He only allows 1 earned run. Yankees kill him with a couple of errors. Overall, 7 innings, 1 earned run, 3 runs in total, just 4 hits, struck out 4, threw 100 pitches total. Simply put, Taillon did everything he needed to do to keep the Yankees in the game. The defense hurt him, but he was still very solid throughout. And it was at a point where the Red Sox scored 3 runs right in the first 3 innings, and the Yankees found themselves down 3-0 right out of the gate. Yankees offense would not come alive until the 8th inning against a familiar face in Adam Ottavino. We all remember Adam Ottavino, right? So, it ends up being that Ottavino comes in for Eovaldi, who was pitching really well. He was able to get 2 outs in the inning. Got to remember, the Yankees did add a run before Ottavino came into the ballgame. Gardner hit a single to right field, scoring Florio, who doubled to lead off the inning. Insert Ottavino. That's where the Yankees started their damage. Ground rule double from Stanton. Move Gardner to third. Then you see Tyler Wade running for Stanton. This is important. We're going to bring this up in just a minute. But back to the action. Rougui Odor doubles to deep left center field. Seems like this guy is really clutch. Yankees tie the game as Gardner and Wade score easily. And then a bloop single from Gleyber Torres scores Odor. And the Yankees take a 4-3 lead. A lead that they would not relish. So they had their trouble with Eovaldi. Ends up being that they get 2 runs on Eovaldi's name and on his stat line. But Ottavino comes in and the Yankees take advantage. One thing to note, in a previous matchup in the series, Odor decided to bunt on his own against Ottavino. It was not a smart baseball play. Why? Ottavino's been struggling against lefties. Michael Kay was a big advocate of hating the bunt in that situation, and rightly so. Yankees needed more runs. They need to tally on. And a guy who's been one of their best hitters can't be laying down a bunt and taking the bat out of his own hands. So in this situation, you saw what Odor was able to do against Ottavino, and it paid dividends. That's what Michael Kay was saying. And I know he took a lot of heat for it, and people were saying, oh, you know what, a smart baseball play. No, at that point, especially given that Aaron Boone said flat out that Odor bunted on his own, it was not a smart baseball play at the time. I get he was trying to help the team. I understand his logic, but at the time, I would have liked to have seen him swing the bat. So, in this at-bat, it just showed what Odor can do, especially against a righty who's not very good at getting left-handers out. Let's go back to the Yankee side pitching-wise. Tyone, we mentioned how good he was. Yankees turned the ball over to Jonathan Loaisiga for an inning. He looked solid, allowed two hits, but in his return from the COVID list, he was okay. You know, he didn't allow a run. He got the hold, and he turned the ball over to Chapman, who was returning after his off day. He pitches a scoreless ninth. Got a little shaky there, but ball game over. Yankees at least capture one game, looking to head into game four of the series in hopes of getting a split. Yankees 3-for-10 with runners in scoring position. Only left six guys on base. You have to look at some of the key contributors. Gardner had two hits in a two spot. Floreal in the eighth spot had two hits in three at-bats. Other than that, you had a couple of guys scattered around the lineup with a couple of hits apiece, but nothing too crazy. Why I said Wade pinch running was important. At the end of the inning, Chris Gittens, who was playing first base, got out, and ended up tripping on his own bat. I still don't know how he tripped on his own bat, but he did. Sprained his ankle. He's out. He's on the injured list. But nonetheless, it was important because Wade had to go in the field. Yankees lost the DH, so if the Red Sox would have tied the game, the Yankees would have been in a little bit of a sticky situation not having the DH anymore. But nonetheless, it paid off. Yankees at least get one game in this series. And it just felt like the momentum changed a little bit heading into the final game of the four-game set. Now, I've tried to put into words how I feel about Game 4, and I still don't know if I could comprehend it in a way that makes any sense to my viewers and my listeners. So I'm going to try my best. Domingo Germán on the mound. He was dominant. Absolutely dominant. He goes into the eighth inning carrying a no-hitter. Only allowed one walk. Nothing else. The Red Sox couldn't figure him out. He was pitching very well. Keeping guys off balance. Using his pitch repertoire well. And it just got to the point where it started to get dicey toward the eighth inning. Now, let me paint the picture for you. I was watching the game with my dad, and he knows baseball well. I think he just is tired of this team in general, but nonetheless, he said at the end of the seventh, take Germán out. That's it. I don't care. He's got a no-hitter riding. That's it. Me, being the baseball fan that, you know, wants to see history, said, you know what? Give him a batter. Let's see how it goes. So when we were talking, obviously it was back and forth, and my dad looked at me and he said, regardless, they're going to find a way to mess this up. And simply put, that's what happened. Germán allows a hit in the eighth inning. Aaron Boone quickly takes him out and brings in Jonathan Loaisiga for the second straight day. Now, mind you, pretty fresh bullpen. Maybe no Chad Green, but you still have Britton. You still have Chapman. It was very curious to me seeing him go to Loaisiga after not only using him yesterday, but the back-to-back given that he was out due to being on the COVID list. It was a little surprising, but nonetheless, remember, there is a three-batter minimum, so that is important to note as well. Loaisiga faces three batters in a row, allows three straight hits. At this point, I have my manager cap on. I'm saying, get him out. Like, he's got nothing. Absolutely nothing. Then he lets up a fourth hit. Aaron Boone finally decides to take him out, puts Britton in an impossible situation. Red Sox end up taking the lead in this inning. A five-run eighth inning. All because of bad bullpen management. Just completely ugly. Number one, I want to know what Aaron Boone was doing when Loaisiga was struggling. After the first two hits, I would have been like, all right, I got to get this guy out of here. Like, figure something out. Number two, why not go to Britton right out of the gate from Germán? Give a little change of pace here. Guy who gets a lot of ground balls. You still have a comfortable lead. Like, what was the thought process there? Loaisiga was flat. You could tell from the minute he touched the mound. Like, he had nothing. It was a different guy from the day before and from what we've seen all year. He just did not have it, and Aaron Boone just let him ruin the ballgame. And I don't know what was going through his thought process, But unlike game one, where I didn't give him much slack for going to Chad Green, I'm giving him a lot of crap for waiting so long to take Loaisiga out. After that third batter, Loaisiga should have been out of the ballgame. Britton should have been in. Try to save the damage as much as you can. It was a deflating loss. The Yankees end up losing this game, obviously, if you missed the news. But just simply deflating, especially given the entire game. Yankees got a lead early. They kept adding on runs. Eighth inning, they tacked on another run, made it 4-0. And at that point, German's dealing. You got a fresh bullpen for the most part. You're thinking, okay, the Yankees are going to win this one, right? Wrong. 2 steps forward, 19 steps back. Disappointing. Absolutely frustrating. I don't even know if there's words that could physically put into place what everybody was feeling after this game. Just absolutely incredible. Like, there's no way to really put it into perspective. And I've tried. Over the last, couple of hours or so, I've been trying. But nonetheless, I can't seem to figure it out. Important to note, German, 7th inning, struck out 4 batters in an inning. Gary Sanchez let a pass ball go by and basically walked to it. So he got a chance to face 4 batters. Only the 4th time in Yankees history that it happened. A.J. Burnett did it in 2011. Phil Hughes did it in 2012. And remember, a couple of weeks back, Jonathan Loaisiga did it at Fenway Park against the Red Sox. And then Loaisiga comes in and blows the game. So, it is what it is. But terrible loss. Yankees Nation, I think, was very happy that they had a day off on Monday. I think everybody needed a chance to kind of refresh and regroup. Let's go to Loaisiga for a minute. Loaisiga has allowed 4 more runs in an inning 3 times this season. Each time was in that said 8th inning. So May 7th against the Nats, June 22nd against the Royals, and of course, Game 4 against the Red Sox. He allowed 4 runs total in his other 35 outings this season. So take those outings out of the equation, and Loaisiga's got a pretty dominant ERA, if you're into that kind of stuff. And this game was also the first time in franchise history the Yankees lost a game when they had a pitcher allow 1 hit or fewer and strike out 10 or more batters. So German on the bad side of history. And it's important to note, the Yankees starting pitching was really good in this series. They really were. It was the bullpen that had its fair share of troubles. And the bullpen, which we all said from the word go, was going to get gassed out. And we all know how much they've been used this season already. But it just came to backfire for them in this series. With an off day, the following day, Yankees get a chance to regroup before going to Tampa. The Yankees did make a trade, however. They acquired Clay Holmes from the Pittsburgh Pirates in return for infielder Diego Castillo and fellow infielder Hoi-Jun Park. Now, I'm going to attack Hoi Park before we get into anything about Holmes. Yankee fans were upset about him. Really good AAA numbers. Was really showing some promise. But reports got out that the Yankees analytic team was not very fond of Park, per se. They see him more as a backup infielder. My take on it is this. Did he get a fair chance in the major leagues? No. We saw him for his 1 at bat. Hit a ground out right away. He didn't get a fair shake. Now, is he better than Tyler Wade? I would make a bet that he probably is close, But, again, the Yankees see something in Tyler Wade. I still don't know, but it is what it is. Park is a guy the Yankees did not feel was going to be a long-term fixture in their everyday lineup. And in that case, they were willing to make the trade to send him to the Pirates to get something back that they feel could ultimately help them down the road. Now, in this case, it's Clay Holmes, who's a relief pitcher. A little bit about him. He's 28 years old. He was drafted by the Pirates in the 9th round of the 2011 draft out of high school. He made his big league debut in 2018. He is not arbitration eligible till 2022 and won't be a free agent until 2025. So the Yankees have some club control on him. So far this year, 44 appearances, all out of the bullpen. Has thrown 42 innings, has allowed 23 runs, has a 4.93 ERA. One thing to note about relievers, I don't really like ERA for them. And here's why. You're not having as much innings as a starter. I think the ERA could be bloated. Look at Chad Green, Aroldis Chapman, Jonathan Loaisiga. As good as they could be, the ERA doesn't really indicate that. This guy, very good at getting ground balls. That's something that I feel the Yankees, in general, brought him in for, was the fact that he can produce ground ball outs. He has a 72.8 ground ball percentage, which is really good, to say the least. He has a repertoire of a sinker, slider, and curveball. And he throws a two-seamer occasionally. But he's a guy that, you know, I think the Yankees are going to take a chance on. They know they need innings out of the bullpen. He's a guy that has some big league experience, and they're going to take a flyer on him. One thing they need to fix, he is very bad at walking people. That is a very bad quality of his. He's not a guy that's going to strike out a ton of batters. Only 44 strikeouts in 44 innings. But he has walked 25 batters over his 42 innings of work. So, you know what? The walk numbers need to go down a little bit. He has to have better control. But when he does have that control, he's a guy that could come in, get you a ground ball, especially pitching in Yankee Stadium. The Yankees definitely need that moving forward. Now, you may be asking, Nick, what do you think the Yankees are going to do with the trade deadline? There's all these rumors surrounding the Yankees. Trevor Story, Max Kepler, you name it. The Yankees seem to be involved on everybody. I really don't know what to tell you. I want to say they're going to blow over the luxury tax, but knowing them, I think they're going to play it quote-unquote smart, stay under, because I think that they see the benefits of staying under long-term. I don't know. I really wish I could tell you. This team needs a ton of change, and I think it starts at the managerial position, but that's not going to change anytime soon. I do think they need change. It's just a matter of when and what they decide to do. If I'm a betting man, which you guys know I'm not, I say it probably every show, I don't think they're going to make any big splashes. I think moves like this are what you're going to see. Unless they get a really good deal on a rental or somebody they think can really impact them long term, I don't see them making such a big move. I do expect them to be in on guys that they could control past this year and maybe have the said team eat some of the contracts so they can stay under the luxury tax. They're going to try to play it smart. I do expect them to be players. I just don't know how much game they're going to show at this trade deadline. To be quite honest with you, I think this Rays series coming up is going to dictate just which way the Yankees do go from here. Looking ahead, Yankee schedule. They go to Tampa for a big series against the Rays. Montgomery taking the hill in game one. Game two, it appears it's going to be Nestor Cortez against Michael Wacha. Cortez not stretched out. Could be a situation where you see a lot of bullpen action. And then, as of now, game three, you have Gerrit Cole taking on highly touted prospect Luis Patino. You know, before the Yankees head off to Miami at the trade deadline, maybe they get a Starlin Marte under the July Christmas tree. Who knows? We'll only have to wait from here. But this series is a big indicator of what they're going to do and how they're going to attack this deadline. I think that they're still on the verge of trying to decide what they want to do and how they want to attack it. But a convincing three-game sweep against the Rays may tell Brian Cashman, look, this team has underperformed. Let's try to make some moves to get some pieces in here that can help whip us back into shape. But as always, make sure you follow us on social media for all the latest news and updates regarding our show and more. And of course, after the Rays series, with the upcoming trade deadline, we're going to be very busy. We're going to have a lot more content in store for you. Make sure you stay tuned. Lock and load. Regardless, win, lose, success or failure, bad deadline or good deadline, we'll be here to talk all about it with you. Once again, my name is Nick Delahanty, and I'm the proud host of the Pinstripe Talk podcast, powered to you by Delahanty Media. Yankee fans, I know I have short hair, so I can't really talk. Try not to pull your hair out this week. Let's hope that the next time we talk, the Yankees don't have some heartbreaking losses that I have to negatively rant about. Until next time, as always, let's go Yankees. We'll talk to you really soon.